the officials of social development as well as SASA. And have I missed anyone? My apologies for the meeting that are starting a bit late, but we had a bit of challenges. My staff and honourable Twitter went to the wrong building, so we had to turn back. It's due to our having no sense of direction. Not the fault of the committee at all, so we do apologize for that. Honourable members, when we look at the agenda, we have two items. That's a briefing of the Department of Social Development on issues emanating from the State of the Nation address. And we've requested, as we've discussed as a portfolio committee, for the Department of Social Development to reflect on that. And that is why we're here today. The second issue is deliberations and adoption of the committee report by the South African Human Rights Commission. And I've consulted with the honourable members, and they've indicated a willingness for this matter to stand over. Is that agreed to, just for the committee report, for the next meeting? Thank you. Honourable members, coming back to the agenda, we have one, before we give over to the department, we have an invitation from the Minister of Social Development to participate in the second biannual Substance Abuse Summit at the ICC in Durban, South Africa. That will take place from the 15th to the 17th of March. Since there is no they've asked that that the chairperson attend, but I would like to intimidate the Director General to ask if we could invite the committee along to the conference. And with that, if members could indicate if they would like to attend, that's on the 15th to the 17th of March in Durban at the ICC. Can members, we agree that we will attend as a portfolio committee, and that members will then indicate to the committee secretary the availability so that she can then make the appropriate arrangements. Okay. Given those members that are not here today. Thank you. We have quite a few apologies, honourable members. We've received a substantial amount of apologies. Honourable Member Magagula, Honourable Member that's not here, because our Honourable Member Kopane's got party commitments. Makuba will be joining us later because she has another meeting. Honourable Deputy Minister is out of the country, and as well as the minister. And then also Honourable Member Kenya. Can we get a move for the adoption of those apologies also? Thank you. Can I give over to the Director General to take us through the presentation? Oh, she has a light. Teacher?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good morning to honourable members of the committee. Our head of strategy, Mr. Roger Slatwanyu, will take us through the presentation, which will respond to matters relating to the State of the Nation address and how the department is going to respond to the strategic issues that emanate therefrom. Mr. Tadjai will walk us through that part.
Okay, thanks, DG. Good morning, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, and thanks for the opportunity. As we understood the brief, to quickly just give the SD response to the strategic objective. highlight that relate to the work of social development. In this presentation, I'll just perhaps give a high-level response, and I'm hoping that in the future engagement we'll be able to go into details, particularly the fact that we have a structure to engage the community on. I'm sure we'll be able to go into that level of details. On the issue of job creation, it's actually important for me to perhaps sketch the fact that we started traveling this route in the past 2 years as a Department of Social Development. We've been playing a major role in the need for job creation that the President has spoken to 2 years ago already in relation to the EWP. And we have done considerably very well in this regard. For instance, in the first year, we have managed to register 260,000 451 work opportunities as a sector against the set target of 80,000. So we basically, went beyond the target. And the following year to 2009 and 10, we also have done very well, and we have actually exceeded the target of 96,000 that was set for ourselves by totaling to about 101,000 jobs created or job opportunities created by the sector. I must indicate that the Department of Social Development plays a very key role in as far as the HCBC programs that we run and the ECD are the main contributory programs in relation to this. We are on course on this particular commitment, and I have just put this table to sort of outline the trajectory or the projections thereof. For instance, 2011 to 2012, we expected to create about 132,000 jobs, and it's important that I assure the committee that we were ahead around that. These were the concrete jobs that opportunities that were created based on the budget that the department has. We are, however, able to move beyond the target set by beginning to explore further work opportunities or further areas where we can create jobs. We understood in the State of Nation address that the year that we enter in is the year of job creation, and the department has committed itself to deal with these issues in two different ways. We're looking at the issues of direct jobs, permanent jobs that could be created through filling of funded and vacant posts by the department, the sector as a whole, as the department, SASA, NDA. I'll be able to speak to the numbers around this at later stage. Mainstreaming of EPWP into more service delivery interventions will create further work opportunities, particularly around areas that have been actually identified in the phase two of the EPWP program. We'll be focusing on training and increasing the chances of people to be absorbed in the labor market. Expanding sector capacity is one of the areas that we are closely exploring through a mix of interventions with job creation spin-offs. Here we're looking at strengthening enterprise development in rural areas. This is the area where the National Development Agency will play a major role, as it is one of our entities that basically focus on building capacity and strengthening the CSOs. Further on the direct jobs, we're looking at improving coordination. I think there are a number of initiatives that we currently have, for instance, training through battery scheme that we're actually running, learnerships, and deployment of the social also provisionals to a number of NGOs and the sector as a whole. We want to coordinate that work better. We believe that if we coordinate it better, we're most likely to record more numbers around it indirectly. A skills advancement center that is designed to take an unemployed graduate with an appropriate degree. For instance, they have a lot of psychology graduates.
Have you changed the presentation? You know, adapted it a bit? Because our page 8 in your corresponding.
Do you
think that's what I'm using? The last one.
We have a number of graduates that have a psychology degree, theology degree, a lot of social sciences. We want to reorientate their training, towards statutory social work, and perhaps have them absorbed as paraprofessionals. We think this is going to create real work opportunities for most of the unemployed graduates in South Africa. Also, a possible creation of the Department of Social Security, although it's still a proposal, it will provide scope for more permanent jobs to be created. Also, we're looking at some of the policy options, some of the existing policies that we have, for instance, social distress could be linked to enterprise development, where vouchers can be claimed. It tends to create more opportunities as well in communities, perhaps through cooperatives. The indirect part, in the past we've been subsidizing NGOs, say for instance giving them 75% and hoping that they would raise the 25% to be able to deliver the services on the ground. We're looking at reforming that policy environment towards program funding, where we can basically create effective demand on the ground. So we'd want to engage NGOs in that respect and be able to support them fully so that they're able to operate optimally, both in terms of human resources and in terms of service delivery. So that's another opportunity that we're looking at. The social infrastructure, particularly facilities, will equally increase labor absorptive capacity in the sector by covering the entire value chain from construction, maintenance, and service provision. So the program funding is most likely to help in that regard as well. More internally, we're looking at supply chain policies to be reviewed. We're hoping that the network of enterprises that we set up through our community development and the NDA, if we begin to procure from them, it's going to create that effective demand and also give them the space to grow and absorb the capacity of people. So this is another area of job creation. But also, we are particularly targeting enterprises that are owned by women, people living with disabilities, and the youth. Towards the decent work, we would be safeguarding the EPWP workers' condition. In this respect, the department has introduced, working closely with Treasury, the incentive grant allocation, which will allow for the elimination of unpaid beneficiaries, making sure that we level the playing field in as far as the stipends are concerned for the EPWP workers. But also from the social insurance perspective, the introducing of mandatory pension, we believe that it's going to assist in terms of protecting the benefits of people in employment. But also we're exploring through that particular policy position to incentivize the formalization of employment through subsidization of retirement contribution. So we hope that it's going to go a long way towards creating decent employment. I think one of the things that came out is that our job creation drive should also enhance youth development. We've quite you know, keen to work around that particular area. In particular, through our research, our population unit generates a lot of research where they point out that the youth population in South Africa is very active, it's very educated, and are willing to volunteer and sell their labor in the markets, in the labor markets. So we want to begin to use those studies, share with other departments the demographic dividends pertaining to young people, but where possible also directly support the initiatives pertaining to youth, for instance, the National Rural Youth Cooperatives. Government must still often lift our post. The department has also done well. We have achieved, we have recorded successful progress in this area. We have brought the vacancy rate from 15% in the last 2 years to 9%. Our target for this coming year is going to be 5%, but we're hoping that by 2014 it's going to be at 3%. The 3% being that we're quite aware that it cannot be 100% because of various stages of filling, advertising, shortlisting, and approval being sought in a bit of that lag that we always exist. Paying SMMEs on time within 30 days, the department is continuously reviewing and strengthening its processes, internal controls, so that we are able to comply with the treasury regulation in this particular area. The fight against corruption also continues. This is something that the president has also clarified. Particularly from a SASSA perspective, we're committing to clean the social grant system, and the South African Social Security Agency will be implementing an electronic benefits management system that will address the serious forms of fraud, but also will be exploring new technologies such as the biometric within the environment of Social Security Administration. On the fight against HIV/AIDS, we believe that through research we'll be able to begin to deal with the social determinants of HIV/AIDS to augment what the Department of Health is actually doing. But also we of the view that the focus on social behavioral change remains very key, and the department will continue to work around that. The support to the people who are already affected and with HIV/AIDS and chronic illnesses, we will be working towards that as well. Social grants will be linked to economic activity and community development to enable short-term beneficiaries to become self-supporting in the long run. This is what came from the State of National Affairs. The department is of the view that those young people and young adults who are grant beneficiaries and have skills and can work should be supported and possibly should be linked to enterprise development that are run by our agencies, including NDA. We will continue to prioritize crimes against women and children. The focus here from the department side would be to continue to address gender-based violence, reproductive health, and rights. So a focus on capacity building and training on mainstreaming gender into research and local integrated development plans. Our population unit is playing an increasing strategic role around that. In fact, it has become one of the major priorities in the department so that they are able to lead us around this particular area. We'll be conducting victim satisfaction surveys to gauge the state of affairs around gender-based violence. Information that will be shared with the rest of government with a set of indicators developed thereof. We'll be implementing and monitoring social crime prevention strategy as well. We will also develop human trafficking rehabilitation programs, integrated, also on the register side, we'll work very closely to register child abuse, neglect and exploitation, child protection registers, and possibly begin to share more widely this information with employment agents, where prosecution is needed, we'll facilitate that. We believe that in the short term, we might see numbers getting higher in the CRP, but the idea is to try as much as we can to make sure that there isn't abuse happening within our social space. Develop prevention and early interventions, this is where the focus would be. Also focusing on the National Surveillance Study on Child Abuse, Neglect and Exploitation. We will work with communities and other key stakeholders to deal with drug peddling and drug abuse, which are tearing some communities apart, and the department is very instrumental in this particular area. We will implement a comprehensive campaign on anti-substance abuse with specific emphasis on abuse of alcohol. I think this coincides with us having to review the National Drug Master Plan, so we'll be able to put specific proposals around those. Finalization of the regulations for the Prevention of and Treatment for Substance Abuse Act. We would want to subject the program such as Kimoju, which has been so far successfully, but I think we would want to look at if whether there's a scope for improvement in that particular area. A reduced substance abuse-related mortality and morbidity through our central drug authority is one of the areas that remains a key concern as well. Chair, I think this really, in short, covers some of the key issues that we pull out and highlight the responses.
Thank you very much,
Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Rather than add, I would like to draw the committee's attention to the fact that in our response we have a mixed bag of both work opportunities, which by definition are not permanent jobs, and perhaps the words decent work don't necessarily associate themselves very well with that. The reason simply being that there's a very strong training element that goes with it, that people are not paid a salary, but instead receive a stipend, because part of the package is training. And that's the strong component of our expanded public works program. But also, of course, you will have seen from the presentation, we have a set of jobs that are permanent, full-time, that are also created. So I just thought perhaps I should highlight that to the committee, that we have two categories of matters relating to work. On the one hand, we have work opportunities. On the other hand, we have jobs that are more full-time and permanent. Thanks very much, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Chair and honourable members. Morning. I also don't have much to add, Chair, save to say that we also responded by identifying all the critical posts within the agency nationally that we need to fill. I also want to indicate that we've identified a certain work that is more permanent in nature, but there's also work that we're dealing with addressing backlogs, major backlogs, especially within our registry warehouses, where jobs are not necessarily going to be of a permanent nature. However, what we're now busy with is to provide the Minister with a detailed plan on how we're going to embark on this project. Perhaps we'll respond. respond to some of the specific questions that may come from the committee. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Kali. Ms. Dangor?
Thanks, Chair. Just a comment, I think that's important to make. The nature of the presentation starts with jobs and then talks about the other functions of social development. And I think it's the nature of the request and the way we were dealing with it. But if one looks at it, all of the other issues are important for creating jobs. Building a socially cohesive society is actually very important for people to go into jobs. So when we talk about social assistance, comprehensive social protection is about reducing inequality and allowing people to come. If you don't do that, the likelihood of people actually getting into the world will be limited. Similarly, investment in education, ECD, is about the future skill deficit. Reducing inequality between men and women, reducing violence against women, is extremely important for communities and households and individuals to enter the world of work. So when we talk about direct jobs, we talk about EPWP, but we also talk about the long-term contributions that we make to society, and that actually allows people to get into the world of work. I thought it's important to make that point so that people don't see the rest of what we're doing as not being contributing to jobs and income and being developmental.
Honourable members, have any questions? Honourable Member Namula.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you to the department for the presentation. My first question, I'll start from the back. It's on page 13. Reduced substance abuse, that's slide 30. Reduced substance abuse related mortality and morbidity. I'd like to know how will this be done? Is there any strategy in place? Is there any plan that the department has? And then on the second bullet, implement a comprehensive campaign on anti-substance abuse with specific emphasis on abuse of alcohol. When will this campaign start? Will rural or the most affected provinces be first on the list, and does the department intend working with distributors of alcohol in that campaign? And then on 27, bullet 27, establish 2 one-stop centers for victims of crime and violence in 2 provinces. Why only 2 provinces? And which are these provinces, if you can tell us the 2 provinces who are your question on bullet 17. Vacancy rate of the department is currently 9%. My question there is, disabled persons are forever complaining that the percentage of intakes in departments are very low. What is your plan or view on filling vacant posts when necessary with disabled persons, and what percentage do you look at? And then I'm very much for projects that is now on slide 11, and I sincerely appreciate all the work that goes into getting people employed. I'd like to know the view, what is your view on monitoring of SMEs to be able to deliver goods of high standard so that it can be promoted successfully? I'll stop there for the time being, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you so much, Department, for the your presentation. It's quite good to hear from you that you are going to fill the funded posts with immediate effect. But there are problems that I would like us to share that maybe as a national structure you don't even know about. Conakry, you've got district offices in all the provinces, which may think that they are functional, and yet they are not. I want to give you an example of the Eastern Cape, where for the past 4 months, there has been no work done in the College of Education in Rusiki, which houses 7 departments, including social development and SASA. It has been a very, very bad situation. And up to now, there's no electricity at all. I've been battling, trying to get hold of Public Works to assist. I requested Mr. Yawa in Eastern Cape to help with a generator and petrol so that they can move. But the generator was very small and can only accommodate 4 computers. And people are flocking in the offices, they don't get assistance. There's also been a problem where it was said that there's no money for SRD and people would not make applications. Those who are sick cannot get the forms because the computers are not working, so they cannot retrieve the forms. So everything has been stuck there. Also, in your program, SASA is saying when we are doing reviewals, we will not inconvenience people. It was quite surprising when the monies were just stopped. People couldn't get their grants, and they were told to go to the offices. It was a painful situation to see people driven in wheelbarrows to the offices.
We are currently discussing the DSDR
Organization
address. If you look at the presentation, I don't have a problem with you raising the issues, which is really it's service delivery issues. But right now, it's not relevant to what we are discussing. I'm sure that even after the meeting, we can have a meeting because you have the acting CEO here with his team and the DG, and then we can sort out those issues because it is quite serious the way you, I mean, if you are raising the issue of applications that cannot be processed because of no electricity and so on, it is quite extremely serious. But could we please just focus on the presentation itself?
Oh, all right. No, I was just going to check on that, to talk about the problems that are there in the department. For instance, I just wanted to know, I didn't hear about it, the Masipatela program, is it still there with the department? And the skills development program, what do you have which will assist those CBOs and NGOs to acquire skills so that whenever the department is funding them, they must be well equipped to use the money in a way that it won't be questionable and all that. Thank you. I'll come back later.
Thank you very much, Honourable Member. Honourable Member Tswete, followed by Honourable Member Kenya. I don't know, Honourable Member Masilo, would you also like to say something?
Thank you very much.
I just want to get the rundown. Honourable Member Kosa, would you also? No, you're fine.
Thank you very much, Chair. I'd also like to thank the department for the very informative I don't know what to call the report, but it's the State of the Nation address, emanated from the State of the Nation address. And I think it will also assist us on when we discuss our budget speeches, because it has all the issues that were raised by the President. But my worry is on the slide 28, 30, and I see it very difficult for a department alone to deal with the question of human trafficking rehabilitation programs and also the National Surveillance Study on Child Abuse and the finalization of regulations for the prevention of and treatment of substance abuse. I just want to check whether there is a strategy in place whereby you will also work with the Department of Education, Department of Police, and also the new department, which is Department of Women, Youth, and Disabilities, because I don't see the Department of Social Development doing this alone. It's a very hard thing to deal with. And the, and also, I think also the, if you still remember when we were trying to come up with a deal of, was it social assistance bill? I can't remember its format of the word. It was when we were talking about the readiness of health on, yes, on the readiness of health. Therefore, I still feel that even the question of HIV and AIDS, it's something that you have to do it with the Department of Health. And I feel that, Chair, up to now we haven't received, I don't know, because when we were talking about that deal, we said we should wait because it's a wrong time, and we thought that we should wait until such time we discuss that deal. And we're still waiting from the Department of Health. What happens to the bill? Is it no longer continuing or not? Though it's not in the in the state of the nation address, but it has issues that are, you know, yes, that are on the state of the nation address, because it does touch on the question of people that are getting grants, and of, remember, we're talking about chronic, between chronic diseases, whether they should get grants or not, those people. So what is happening to that bill? The last one is on the SASA. I think we should, DJ, we should start in the house before we go outside. Mr. Packard, I'm talking about Mr. Packard, that I hear he's still acting. And I don't know how we're going to create jobs if we don't start right in our house, to say we shouldn't be having people that are acting for a long time. Because I think it was last year when we were talking about acting. Maybe when are we going to finalize the people that are already inside the department that are acting? Thank you very much.
Honourable Member Tweta, Honourable Member Kenya, thank you, Chairperson, and thank you for the presentation. I think Honourable Tweta has touched the issue of vegan rates, because really we have been talking about this vegan rates for quite a long time. And if we say that we are concerned about the state of the nation address on job creation, I think it is necessary therefore to implement this, as she is stating the problem of acting all the time. On page 12, the issue on the reduction in the bullet number 2, page 12, the issue on the reduction in the new HIV and AIDS infections levels through social behavioral change. I wonder if this reduction has got any strategy, therefore, to use, to, and if you can unpack for us, how are you going to reduce this infection of HIV and AIDS? Just to unpack so that we know there are what strategies that really are going to do to be implemented. And also on the issue of page 13, slide 25, bullet 2, you are talking about the short-term beneficiaries to become self-supporting in social grants. Now, have you got any program on exit strategy for developing these communities? Or are you also taking it with the link to sustainable livelihoods approach? Or you have got a separate exit strategy, maybe training of them when they are exit, you are doing the exit strategy, removing them from the beneficiary, from the role of social grants. Thank you.
Thank you very much for those questions on Honourable Member Kenya. Honourable Member Vasilo, anything to add?
Thank you, Chair. Let me thank the department for the briefing, and partly I've been covered by the previous member on the vacant post. There was a mention that there's a reduced number for vacant posts, funded vacant posts. But I just want to check because the president said previously departments used to advertise for 6 months and take a year to appoint. Then he taught strongly on the 3 months that everything must be done. So as Member Chair just said, Mr. Pakati, he has been acting since last year up to now, very, very disappointed about it. But also to congratulate the CEO of the NGA, Mrs. Mhlaba, for being appointed as the CEO of the NGA. The last point, there was also a mention of SASA recipients, that there will be a plan or strategy of no more welfare or development state. What are the plans or strategy for the department to come up with those strategies for everybody to do their work rather than receiving the welfare grant? Thank you, Chief.
Thank you, Chief. Mine is on page 3, slide 5, and it is on the excellent performance of job creation. You have exceeded your target set. I'd like now to know if these were sustainable jobs, and if possible, if the department can give us a breakdown for province. If it was not sustainable, can you please tell us the duration of these jobs? The duration that these jobs lasted. And at present, are all these jobs still filled, or are they now a vacant, a percentage of vacant posts?
Okay. Any other member? We all covered. Thank you. In terms of the questions that I have to ask, if you look on, if you can go to slide 7. DSD's dish response in terms of direct jobs permanent, the filling in of funded and vacant posts by the sector. SASA and the NDA, DSD, SASA and the NDA. I think I want to add my voice to the fact that some strategic posts in all three entities have been, the two entities and DSD has been vacant for quite some time. Now, I think it's in terms of your CEO post, the acting CEO will answer that question. I mean, they need to reserve that question for the minister. Right? The issue of regional managers of SASA, I'm sure the acting CEO can respond to that question because you do have some vacancies. But when it comes to vacancies in organizations, you have organograms that has been approved, and then you have funded and then you have unfunded vacancies. I would like to know whether those organograms have been adapted, because you can get an organogram that's a wish list. That is, it's really the ideal organization that you'd like to see. And then there's an organogram that you have to live with. Now, it's more realistic to have an organogram that you can live with, because that's the money that you have, instead of an organogram that is gathering dust year after year. So have DSD, SASA, and the NDA adapted the organograms to adapt to the financial realities of the department as well as the organizational challenges that you have? I'm asking this question because obviously it will have an impact on service delivery and also in terms of your strategic objectives that you want to achieve, making it more realistic. And I think you should be honest, if you are still busy with it, I think you can inform us. In terms of your EPWP, the issue of ECD learnerships, EPWP learnerships, especially when it comes to ECD training, you know, especially in our rural areas, it makes a huge impact, because you have your teachers at the ECD centers that previously had no formal qualification, now having a qualification. So you bring a huge improvement in the lives, not only of the children that they teach, in terms of now they have, they now can have a developmental program at the ECD centers, but also in terms of the lives of those teachers. I want to know, in terms of those learnerships, will they continue in the sector? And if you don't have the targets with you, you can always provide to the committee with those targets in terms of the learnerships. Then the last question is, and I think if you could also just link that up with the CETAs, the programs that you will be running with the CETAs. And then, especially the health and, is it health and welfare sector. Then the issue of linking 50,000 beneficiaries, social grant beneficiaries, economic opportunities. Have you thought what kind of beneficiaries from what grant types? Would it be your CSG? Would it be your disability grantees, grant beneficiaries? Would it be from what grant types? Have you worked out a strategic plan around it? Yes, I think what we as a committee needs to be fair on is that most of the detail of these issues that you've raised in the presentation will also be quantified in the minister's budget speech. Okay? So I'm sure they want to leave some surprises for us for them. Yeah. So that we understand. But the purpose was for us to really get a picture of what is the social sector's contribution. But if you can just give us that detail that the members ask in terms of the questions, it's fine. And we do realize that some of the other finer detail we'll wait for the Honourable Minister Dlamini's speech. Honourable Member Lamula and Swete, now the Chair. Before we give over.
Thank you. My last question, Chair, thank you for the privilege. This is page 4, slide 8. A skills advancement centre that will be designed to take unemployment. I'm very well aware of it, that it all depends on what the budget will be. You know, I would like to know how the rural students will benefit from this. Bearing in mind that recently, last year, the end of last year, you can with the college that really the rural pupils were closed down, and many rural students had to go to Stellenbosch to complete courses. Many dropped out because of accommodation that was too expensive in the Stellenbosch area, university fees being too expensive or unaffordable, especially for those that did not qualify or even qualified for bursaries. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. The college is closed now. No more social workers for us.
No more social workers. And we have this very big problem of social workers, national problem. So I don't know how we're going to implement all our acts that we're putting through Parliament if we have this huge shortage of social workers.
Thanks, Chair, for giving us the second time. Mine, it is a clarity. So on page 11, slide number 21, the cleaning of the social grant system of thought. Chair, I'm not quite sure, because you're talking about South African social security agents that will be implemented in an electronic benefits management system. I just want to check whether this has already started, because it doesn't indicate whether it's coming or already operating. So if you could... if I could get that clarity. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honourable Members. We've closed down the questions. Otherwise, the department will forget until tomorrow. So over to you, DG, and the acting CEO of SASA.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I brought with me a sizable number of senior managers who I'm sure would be very happy to tackle some of these questions. Perhaps I should just deal with some which you may have preferred should be deferred to the minister. I'll start with the acting appointments, especially in the National Development Agency, the South African Social Security Agency. The post has been advertised, the shortlist has now been prepared. We are waiting for the date of interviews to happen, and that post, I expect, will be filled very soon. It has taken long, certainly, but we are coming around, so the interviews are going to happen very shortly. So we will come to the committee to inform them as to who the successful candidate is in that regard. I would like to allow senior managers from the department who are here to field the various questions that have been posed, and if there are some that are left, I will then mop up. I can start with Mr. Dango.
Thanks. To start with the question on substance abuse and a particular focus on alcohol, the campaign has already started, and why we're saying a particular focus on alcohol is based on research done by the Medical Research Council and a whole range of other institutions that showed that we've got a significant substance abuse problem, but amongst those, alcohol is actually the biggest contributor to morbidity, to mortality, and also to social crime. And therefore, the minister has been really tasked to champion a campaign, which is already kicked off. Also, given the fact that when we started this campaign, it was just before Christmas, we looked at the advertising spend of the alcohol industry, and we found that they actually peak around Christmas and Easter, and they actually they brag about that, to use a very loose term. So you look at the peaks when we have mortalities and injuries coincides with the campaigns by the industry themselves. So what we needed to do was enlist civil society to partner with us. So we looked at who was already engaged with this, and we found that Soul City was engaged with the Pusa Wires campaign. So we are now partnering with Soul City around that. So we're focusing on alcohol, but we're not ignoring the other issues of substance abuse. Also, to build a level of gravitas around this, we set up an IMC, an Interministerial Committee on both substance and alcohol abuse, because we found that getting senior managers and politicians involved was difficult, the absence of an IMC. So we now have an IMC chaired by the minister, which brings together all the key departments involved in the issues, from Treasury that deals with issues of customs, home affairs, DTI, SAPS, health, education we brought on board as well, so that we can actually not just allocate tasks, but also follow it up at the highest level. That IMC is also being supported by a technical committee comprised of senior managers now, so that we take the level of accountability in it. In terms of the reach of the campaign, we need to reach all corners of South Africa. And we're dealing with less resources than the industry has, so we have to be quite creative in how we do that. So we're using both, what we call above the line and below the line approaches, so sort of popular media, but also radio, TV, and also people actually going into communities to talk to people about the issues around reducing alcohol abuse. We, in terms of the engagement with the industry, the language we use is we can engage with the industry because it's their product, but we cannot partner with them because we found that that is now something which is a contradiction to the kind of work we do and partnering with the industry. So that is an approach taken not only by our department but by all the member departments in the IMC. So we made a decision we cannot partner with any members of the industry. We need to talk to them, but we cannot partner with them. We note that they have similar campaigns, but we feel that we need to have a campaign that doesn't just talk about responsible drinking. We need to focus on the dangers of the substance and other substances. So I think you'll see another peak in our own campaign over Easter, because we need to counter the kind of messaging coming out from the industry themselves. I need to point out that this is a campaign that's almost as big as the anti-smoking campaign. We're going to be getting the same kind of counter messaging from the alcohol industry that we got from the tobacco industry. So it's going to be a hard campaign, and it's a very important campaign for us over this period. DJ, I think I've covered that question.
In terms of what Mr. Dango said, besides your alcohol abuse issues, you also have challenges in terms of your drugs like cocaine, heroin, and so on. And we see increased incidences where people are involved in criminal activity, and also in terms of your abuse of these drugs by youth, especially the impact of youth. I think if you look at the event of the 15th to the 17th of March in Durban, well, that also be an attempt to really just give it serious attention to what is happening in the sector and what the sector can do with civil society.
Yes, Madam Chair, it certainly will be. In fact, that summit is truly what the word summit meant, the culmination point, because we expect out of it a program of action which will involve everyone in society mounting a campaign against alcohol. I think there's a particular challenge with respect to alcohol. And the particular challenge has to do with the fact that this is a licit substance. People sell it legally. It is protected. And there's a very strong lobby behind it. Unlike the other substances that have been driven underground because they are illegal. Our focus on them remains important. But our battle with alcohol is going to be an interesting one, because this is a substance that is legal. It's not illegal to consume it, it's not illegal to sell it, although of course there are restrictions to who you can sell it to. But who you sell it to and who takes it in the end are not always the same people. So that's going to require the whole of society to be involved and to be looking beyond just government and members of parliament. We're looking at a whole range of social partners, including religious networks, civil society organizations, business community themselves, to be part of this big campaign. So we will certainly be looking at all the issues you've raised, Madam Chair. But I think the unique challenge with alcohol is the fact that this is a licit substance which anybody can acquire legally over the counter.
Honourable Chairperson, honourable members, on the issue on filling of posts, I want to comment as follows. In the area of disability, we are complying with the DPSA and Departmental Disability target of 2%. We are currently in the process of reviewing the employment equity plan of the department. We will have a revised target to exceed that 2% rate for people with disabilities. We will be looking at a potential 4%. It is not an easy target to achieve, and we will have to look at targeting disability organizations to assist us in that regard. I must just mention that we have people with disabilities and quite a all the levels of the department, right up to senior management level. And there was an indication that there are too many acting appointments all the time. We are currently in the process of filling all vacant posts, especially those in which SMS members are acting. I must indicate to the committee that the shortlisting for all those posts have been finalized, and interviews are in the process of being set up, and that should deal with the issue of active appointments. although there are some posts that strategic posts that become vacant from time to time, and we do attend to that with the urgency it deserves. As regards to the issue of funded and unfunded posts and organizational structures, our organizational structure only have funded posts. In terms of the public service regulations, we are not supposed to have unfunded vacancies or posts on the structure. So the vacancy rate that we have is actually a true reflection of the situation in our structure. Our organization is currently undergoing a review, the organizational structure as such, to realign ourselves with government's objectives and priorities. This should be completed during the course of this year and will inform potentially reorganizing our posts, post establishment, as well as possible creation of additional posts. Obviously, where new posts are involved, we have to bid for that at National Treasury. I think that is it from my side, Honourable Chairperson.
Thank you, Honourable Chair and members. On the nature of work opportunities created through the public employment programs of the EPWP, specifically to what are very linked questions regarding the sustainability of the opportunities that were created or their duration, whether they still continue, I would like to indicate, to reiterate to the members that where job creation is concerned, the policy objectives and the strategic objective of government is to create jobs. Jobs ultimately, or in the long run, that enjoys the full benefit that is enjoyed within the various labor institutional framework of our country in terms of the basic conditions of employment, Labor Relations Act, including employment equity and the others. But given the imperative of what we're dealing with to create jobs, we are in agreement that we'll look at work opportunities across the whole range and in the public service. The nature of these jobs are short term, the objective being to grow them into being jobs where this is possible. Specifically, in terms of the targets that we had and the achievement that you referred to, we'll recall that the programs that participated in this home community-based care, early childhood development, these are the programs that were the initiators in terms of the social sector. Were they sustainable? Are they still there? Yes, the majority of them are continuing in terms of the caregivers. Why? Because it is in the nature of our sector that the service that is rendered by this category of workers is not short-term in itself, as we know. It is central to the combination of the service delivery model that is maintained by the sector. Because, for example, as we are aware, rendering ECD is not a 3 month or a 6 month or a 9 month affair, let alone to train them. It takes something like 2 years. So the majority of those who have participated in the EPWP through these programs are still in these programs. And it, in the beginning, we have not succeeded in covering everybody participating in this to receive in terms of the stipends that were provided to them. terms of those that have graduated, we've proven the potential that various caregivers and participants in the EPWP have the opportunity to graduate specifically. We have had provinces that have created opportunities for caregivers to graduate into auxiliary social workers. We have also had provinces that have earmarked and created opportunities for some of those who have participated in ECD to become teachers. There is interest from education that some of these become teachers, and also from health to become nurses. In terms of will ECD learnership continue, there is interest and a need for this. The reorganization of the CETAs and their migration from labor to the Department of Higher Education and Training will contribute a great deal. However, there's much that's work in progress, but we hope that this will realign some of the critical areas that are required. And the same goes for the CETAs that have been mentioned and the linkages. I'll stop there for now.
Thank you, Chair. There was a question around the status of the bill that was brought to this committee and Parliament to deal with the issues of one, reconsideration of applications declined by SASA, and two, introduction of a new disability assessment. This committee will recall that it felt that we should not proceed with the definition of disability to avoid the unintended consequence of people with chronic illnesses at that point falling out of the system. And the committee will recall also that the Department of Health made a commitment to explore the issues of primary health care, but also to see how it can deal with issues of chronic illnesses. So as far as the issue of the department seeking to introduce a new definition for disability with a view to assess disability in a more consistent and uniform way, that will not, at this stage, at least in our minds, Chair and members, come back to Parliament, but we will continue to explore options around the application of a harmonized assessment tool with a view to ensure that we, in a uniform way, assess disability. And then a part of that work is being done by our legal services people. A second question, which I must confess, Jay, is difficult to deal with. And this is around a strategy to remove beneficiaries. Of course, at face value, I don't think it's quite what the member means, that our whole work is geared towards removing beneficiaries, because it is not. Our work is geared towards ensuring the provision of income support for people in poverty. Now, linked to that, and in line with modern social security systems, there is, of course, the need to link such income support provision with employment initiatives, employment activation, integration, reintegration into the labor market. But to a great deal, such work is being undertaken by a range of other departments. The Department of Labor, for example, has an employment services. The Department of Economic Development is focused on job creation. And our work really would not be on removing beneficiaries, but rather to ensure that they have income support and then to link them to other initiatives. I should, in the same breath, say that research that we have undertaken in developed countries and many developing countries does not necessarily, or rather leaves us less optimistic about such an assignment, and especially if we look at it in the context of South Africa's own labor market development in Spain. So I think there's not going to be a point at which we're ever going to, and let me use the words of one of the ministers, in our lifetimes, Chair, the social grant system numbers will not decline very significantly. Countries with successful social security systems, we introduced them 100 years ago, Sweden, Norway, have grown them and they continue to grow them. So there's unfortunately, and I think the President used the word, it is the ideal not to have people on grants, but I don't think there was ever a commitment that we're ever going to do it. Recent trends globally, China, where there's more than 1 billion people, they are growing their grant system at such rates that boggles the mind. Over 2 million people have accessed social grants in China in the last 2 to 3 years. So, Chair, sorry for the long rendition. The expectation that we're going to come in ever should we say these numbers have now been reduced, we've removed them, is an unrealistic expectation. I thank you.
Thanks, honourable members. Mr. Choma has made my work quite easy. I think one relates to the issue of filling of five executive management posts. Three of these are regional executive managers. We are at an advanced stage, Chair and Committee. I actually monitoring this on a weekly basis personally. Last week there were just only two positions that needed competency assessments. We've finalized competency assessments for the others. Once we're done, then we'll be able to conduct the final interviews for the filling, obviously following the guidance that was issued by Cabinet for such level of positions. So there's quite significant progress there. With regard to the organogram, unlike the department, for ours we had a big challenge. Because when the agency was established, we relied on certain norms that we followed in order to determine the structure. I think previously we raised this with the committee and we indicated that we will be reviewing the structure. There's two processes we're following here. In the short term, we've done two things. One, we're doing what we call optimal utilization of staff, where we are doing the placement, looking at placement and matching of staff skills with relevant positions in all the 9 regions, right to the local offices. We also looked at posts that are unfunded in the structure, that were never, in fact, funded, and there was never any indication of intention to fill those, which I think that's what the Madam Chair referred to, wish list of an organogram. As you know, currently we have an overall staff complement of about 7,600. We've then identified up to now, which we are busy now consulting with the regions, about 7,000 posts that we are going to abolish. Now, those are the posts that we are not necessarily, retrenching people. These are the posts that were in the structure that were never really, since that came into being, were never really being active. We have discussed this matter with the minister in our recent top management meeting, and she is supportive of this as a first short-term measure, and then we will send the final recommendations to her, because in terms of the legislation, she must give the final approval. The long term, we also are undertaking a similar exercise with the Department of Reorganization and Restructuring as part of our overall re-engineering exercise. That is going to give us a more idealistic structure that's aligned to the mandate and also to the overall objectives of the organization. I think the last issue was on fraud management. whether we have started to rolling out or implementing the automation and other interventions. We are pleased to announce that we have now finally agreed with Treasury after we had a lot of interaction. They were also monitoring our progress that we should embark on the issue of automation. Now, this is where fraud interventions come into being, into place. We're looking at solutions that will focus on preventing fraud and also making it easy for us to detect fraud. Currently, the focus has always been on corrective measures, chasing fraudsters and also people cheating the system. We, since last year, we've embarked on a discussions with the SIU. As you know, we've been working with the SIU. And our concern has always been we are not investing the money towards the right interventions. So we agreed on some of the functions that the SIU will be handing over to us. And also we have agreed that some of the things we are paying for, like investigations, prosecutions, really fall outside our ambit and our mandate. There are institutions and law enforcement agencies designed to deal exactly with that. We say they must actually assist us in that. So we will then be able to redirect our resources towards the more preventive measures. Unfortunately, I don't think I have the liberty to announce figures at this stage before the budget speech, but we have received a comfortable allocation to be able to roll out from the ensuing financial year, which is starting from the 1st of April. I hope I tried to respond to that, Honourable Member. Thank you. Well, just one last issue. I also wanted to indicate that we acquired also, which links to the total number that we've indicated for job creation, on this fraud management, we've identified 40 posts for compliance officers that we will be rolling out nationally in our regions. We're at an advanced stage also of filling those posts, which will also be part of the fraud management and the new approach that we're following. Thanks.
I think the department must now help me. I remember, I hope I remember correctly, that the Department of Social Development has implemented an anti-corruption and fraud policy. I'd like, if that is still so, if it was ever implemented, I would like to know, has this policy brought any changes in fraud and corruption activities in the department? My second question is, was the department pleased with the outcomes achieved, and how successful was the campaign that the department launched on this matter? There was a campaign on this matter, if I remember correctly.
A few years back.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
yes.
Yes, I worked with him. Now, that what happened to that campaign? Because I remember it was... It was in co with, is it Human Science Research Council that helped with booklets and emails and things like that?
Yeah.
And if that was for all departments, that was for all the departments.
I'm satisfied with the question, which was answered by Mr. Pakati, but I'm not satisfied with the question that I asked. Well, DG did not give me all the answer. I spoke about human trafficking programs and the child, you know, use of substance abuse. And your answer was, yes, you were built through churches and NGOs. But the reason why I was asking the Department of Education, the women and youth, people with disabilities, police, it is because it's a huge task for social development only in terms of budget. Whether these departments are also working all together towards these issues that you've raised around use of substance abuse. Thank you.
Just to finish off, Chair, I may not have the numbers now, but quickly, I think the fraud management strategy that was launched some time back was a multi-pronged strategy. There was a particular focus on social grant fraud. There was also general issues relating to procurement and other issues where, for instance, you deal with the issues of disclosure of financial interest and other things. But with us as SASSA, that is where we have taken stock. In fact, we reported recently on the amount collected from people who were identified, especially public servants who were cheating the system. You will recall that at the time we were announcing it, amongst other things, there was an indemnity that was offered by the then Minister Skweyiya on certain people to come forward to declare that they are in fact not legitimate to receive the grant. The government generally saved a lot of money because those people who came, then those grants were terminated. But then that part of that strategy was to partner with the SIU, which is now the 5 years since then. And that has been the work that we've reported back in Parliament previously on number of prosecutions, number of convictions, etc., including also the civil servants that were taken through courts and convicted of defrauding the system, and those were disciplinary processes that were conducted. So there was quite a, at the time there was a need because there was a particular focus. I think there was quite a good progress and achievement. But what we are basically saying now that I think with the new technology that's coming in, looking at social grant and looking at the massive challenges that we have, we really need to adopt recent technologies that are adopted elsewhere in the world as well to ensure that we really focus on how our systems and processes are configured and wired in order to ensure that we really prevent fraud from happening in the first place. Thanks.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to reassure Honourable Members that, I did say in my remarks that I will mop up once the rest of the team has dealt with some of the questions. And that was the question that was not dealt with, and it's not the only one, certainly. But with regard to matters relating to the strategy on human trafficking and rehabilitation, this is not a strategy that the Department of Social Development is able to put together on its own. This is in fact driven by the Crime Prevention and Justice Cluster. And this project is in fact led by the Department of Justice on human trafficking. It's not even led by the Department of Social Development, but we are an important player in that through our victim empowerment program. So we are contributors to a strategy rather than the champions of the strategy itself. And there's a sub-team of this called the Interdepartmental Management Team, which is led by the National Prosecuting Authority, dealing with these issues relating to human trafficking. So we are a participant in a bigger process of government. This is one of those cross-cutting programs of government, certainly. there was another question raised with regard to I think it was Madam Chair who talked about the linking of 50,000 beneficiaries. Madam Chair, you were interested to know which grant types are we talking about specifically? When you look at the grants that we pay out, we give to people with disabilities, to older persons and to children from poor families. Now, people with disabilities are by definition people who are unable to enter the labour market, which is why in fact they are on that count in the first place. It's because they are unable to support themselves through their own participation in the labour market. So there is no expectation that they will necessarily have to graduate from the grant in order to enter the labour market, because in fact the very reason why they are on the program is because they are unable to enter the labour market. But our disability programs also attempt to enable people with disabilities to conquer the impediments into entering the labour market where such conquering is possible, where these impediments can be overcome through skills development and the like. So that is part of what you're looking at there. With regard to older persons, these are people who are beyond their active years of employment, which means that there is no possibility beyond old age to look at the future prospects of entering the labour market. In fact, it's perhaps an indication that you have, in a sense, exhausted your best days of active employment. So those people we are not thinking about. But caregivers of children who are, in fact, the beneficiaries, of caregivers of children who are receiving the child support grant, are a mixed bag. You have some who are older people, but you also have some that are able-bodied young people, some with a reasonable level of education, whose children continue to receive the child support grant, not because the parents are unable to enter the labour market, but simply because the labour market doesn't have the absorptive capacity to accommodate them. Which is why a point was made that other departments like the Department of Labour, the Department of Economic Development, are important partners in our effort to open doors for as many people as possible to enter the labour market so that they are able to live off the sweat of their own. So the grant types that our candidates would are likely going to be your child support grant beneficiaries, caregivers of children receiving the child support grant, who are able-bodied with the requisite levels of education that would allow them to enter the labour market. That is where we're likely to target more. Thanks, Madam Chair. If there are any other questions that we haven't dealt with, Madam Chair, I hope the committee can accept the fact that when we come to present our strategic plan, we will set out details on the various things that we're going to do in more detail. We'll be able to give you the numbers. We haven't really, for today's purposes, tried to pin down on the exact numbers of jobs in particular areas, because this is a high-level presentation. But our strategic plan that we will come to share with you before the budget vote, we will send out the details that you require so that the committee is also fully informed, so that committee members are able to prepare their speeches appropriately. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, DG. Your DDG had his hand up.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Very quickly, I do think that the committee ought also to be able to assist us in this regard. The very reason that you have caregivers who qualify for the child support grant is because they're not engaged in economic activity that pulls them above the threshold. That's the first reason they are receiving the grant. Now, if then an expectation is created that they have now received the grant, and the reason they are receiving the grant is because there was no economic activity in the first place, then you're then coming around and saying then now link them to the economic activity. We need to be able to have our heads around that in terms of how possible that is. So that's the first, I think, qualification that one would like to put across. The second important one is really the level of the threshold. Currently for the child support grant, the level of the threshold in terms of income is 2,500. Therefore, it means that if we do link the caregivers of those children to economic activity, that economic activity, we will have to provide them with an income that is above 2,500 rand for them to be out of the social grant system. So that, I think, very important dynamic that one needs to understand. And then also, if you look at income patterns in South Africa, 45% of South Africans who have full-time jobs and less than 2,500, which is the kind of threshold. So there's a very, very important dynamic that one would like the committee to appreciate and understand. One last point to add as well, please, and this relates to the job creation directive that's come up. Minister with the Director General have in the department constituted a team that is doing an in-depth analysis and audit of what is the social sector's contributions to job creation. In other words, we're looking at social workers, auxiliary workers, women community-based care workers, child and youth care workers, all different types of categories of social services workers, and with the important objective of increasing the numbers. Committee, it's important that some of the areas that we've begun to investigate, such as child and youth care workers, the challenge is service providers. You want more child and youth care workers, service provider has to be accredited by CETA. It's a process. So, in other words, in some of these instances, one of the challenges that we face is working closely with CETA so that a greater number of service providers are accredited, so that we can even see more numbers of the different types of social service workers being active in the field and therefore increasing our impact on jobs in the area. Thank you.
Are you going to say something in conclusion?
In fact, I was going to ask Mr. Webster to conclude on the one question on the
Skills Advancement Centre. Honourable Chairperson, this in a way links to what Mr. Makasela has indicated on the issue around accredited service providers for the training of, amongst others, social auxiliary workers, child and youth care workers. That Skills Advancement Centre is actually still in its conceptual phase. The model must still be developed, and a business case must come up with a business case and bid for the necessary resources. But in the meantime, there are accredited service providers. It's not that there are no accredited service providers. So social auxiliary workers and child and youth care workers are trained. We, however, feel that provinces should build into their human resource plans their targets for social auxiliary workers and child and youth care workers. Again, the training of that category of workers are linked to posts, because once they have been trained, they must be absorbed on the establishment of departments. And that's why I indicated that there needs to be HR plans in all provinces. And obviously this is linked to the norms and standards for social work, the ratios applicable to the number of social auxiliary workers for each social worker. As far as the question on how will rural students benefit from this, this is part of the model that must still be worked out. But obviously one of the strategies will have to be to target in the meantime, we are aware of the challenges in Huguenot College. So, but the providers in the various provinces are providing the necessary training and development. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you. Did you in will the presenter conclude? Okay. If there's any outstanding issues.
Well, Chair, I just wanted to add to the question that Mr. Webster has just argued. Otherwise, we've just taken note of all the questions raised, and we'll indeed, when we come on this presentation, come with the details required.
Thank you very much, honourable members, DG, the CEO, and your teams. I think it's been a very informative session. We now have an idea of what you said at your briefing, the president said, and so we look forward to the budget discussions that we're going to have, and then also we will be seeing you next week with the SASA's annual report. I received an invitation to SCOPA. Today, SCOPA. Are SASA going to SCOPA this afternoon?
No, it's 5 o'clock, Saturday. SCOPA is on
the 2nd of March.
Oh, the 2nd of March.
Yes.
Yeah. So, on the 2nd of March, at 5 o'clock, I think it's also late in the afternoon. Yeah, I think it will obviously be after. We will be sitting with the annual report next week. And then after that, it will go to SCOPA. Thank you for that, honourable members. The meeting's adjourned.